I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 328. Y'all, somebody posted in the Facebook group that I saw today that they are on episode 40 because they're going in order. And like, they just started listening and all of that. And then they were wondering, do we still do sinister sightings, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, God, they've got so much ahead of them. Like, not only number of episodes, but our kookadoodledoo.
Oh my gosh, right?
But also a lot of life.
Yeah. Loss, 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 gain. Loss, 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 gain.
Too bad that's not my waistline we're talking about. It's more gain, 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 gain.
Same. Though ultimately, since we started, I have lost weight.
You have, yeah.
But
you lost it, I found it. Like legitimately, about as much as you've lost is about as much as I've gained.
The weight's the only thing that stays with me.
Feel that. Hey, y'all, we got to tell y'all about the Patreoners, because last week we tried to name all these people, but our program has like been hating us of late and just like cutting shit out. So we didn't get to name them all. Only two of them worked. So thank you.
Name it.
You don't quote Beverly Hills Real Housewife to me. And she says, name them. Name them. So thank you so much, Pamela M. from Virginia.
Savannah M. from Canada.
Alicia D. from Massachusetts.
And Jessica H. from Ohio.
Well, Ohio, are we glad y'all are here.
Oh, Lord.
For real, though. Y'all, they're getting all kinds of bonus content. Like, we're probably up around 240 things on the Patreon now.
Oddly specific to be up around.
Well, because I think it was like, what was it, a couple weeks ago?
No
like
idea.
236 or something. So, I mean, you know, we've had a few episodes come out. So that's why I say around 240. So if y'all are like, hey, we're not on episode 40, like the listener in the Facebook group, and we're caught up and we need more, well, shit, head on over to patreon.com/theAPC podcast.
Also, if you're waiting on your thank you letter, I just have to get stamped. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, because you get a thank you letter when you join. Did I tell y'all the drama the other day at work about the laminator?
No.
Y'all, okay. Part of my job, I make splints. Well, we have a new sister location with a new therapist that needed some patterns to be able to make splints. I made them, cut them out for her, and borrowed our laminator from outside of our department. Like, you know, the company's laminator, y'all. It was all going good. Me and my work BFF, Kim, we were doing it together because, you know, it's oddly satisfying, right? The scissors were like an ASMR, like we were having a blast. Except for my friend Megan, who's very sensory avoidant and was like, what is that noise? And I was like, it's the scissors. She hated it. But anyway, my best friend Kim was like, what else should we laminate? And I was like, my insurance cards? She's like, okay. So put all the insurance cards. It starts going through. It does not come out the other side. I was like, oh, fuck. Why is it not coming out there? The one thing that's not work related is fucking up the laminator that we borrowed.
Yeah.
Y'all, when I tell y'all I had to go fix it, Felix, and I literally had to take this laminator completely apart.
Oh, Lord.
Because one of the other things that we had laminated didn't come through and we didn't know it. So it was like two things laminated just rolled up, spinning. I had to take this motherfucker apart. My cards are so curled up now. Like, I put them in books to try to flatten them.
Yeah.
Ruined my insurance cards and my voter registration card. I was like, of course the thing that has nothing to do with work.
Yeah.
Is going to fuck up the work laminator. Because we were like, this is fun. What else can we do?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Because my insurance cards are like paper. Like, not like, you know, they saved some money.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. I was like, it's already plastic. Why do you?
No. They were paper okay. Insurance cards. So I was like, ooh, let's laminate those so I don't mess them up. Well, yeah. I messed them up. Y'all, the panic of, like, we fucked up the laminator. Oh, my God. And, like, having to unscrew all these parts and then, like, taking pictures so we remember how to put it back together. Because you had to take, like, I don't even know what all we had to take apart. And we couldn't even figure out how to get it open at first. Because it had seams, but, like, it wouldn't even pop open. So, we're like, it's in there forever. Like, I had to do a YouTube video. And I was like, it's still not telling me how to open it. And so finally I found some screws. I was like, oh, and just unscrewed it.
Golly. I used to love to laminate stuff. When I was a library aide in high school, Oh, that was the best.
Yeah.
And it smells good because it's like that burny smell.
Yeah. We were having a blast. We wanted more things to laminate. As Tiffany would say, ended up winding up ruining everything. The sheer panic.
But like, also, how small is y'all's laminator?
Like, it's just wide enough to put like a 8.5 by 11 sheet through.
Okay.
It's little.
Well, I've never had a little one.
It yeah, it's like a travel. Like,
yeah. When you said you moved, like you got it, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. It's like a, it's like an, and it looked old school. Like it looked old. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to buy a laminator. Like, how do you explain that? Like, we broke it, but we weren't doing anything work related in that moment.
Yeah.
Because you know, the people who are the keeper of the things like the laminator are very serious about the things like the laminator. You know, they don't just loan that shit out willy-nilly.
Right. Okay, so this weekend, Tiffany and I were on our own Fix It Felix, and we pressure washed the back porch at my house and the furniture. So much fun, but it was so hot because imagine that we did it at the hottest part of the day, but because it was being pressure washed, so the pressure was like, you know, causing the water to be everywhere. It felt so fucking good. And normally I'm like, ugh, don't squirt me. You know, I mean, that's what Colby tells you. No, I'm just joking. But
no, he doesn't.
I know he doesn't. But I was like, no, it's fine. Just keep doing it. Now, one time she did like do something and it like came on me. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Not try to lose skin.
Yeah. Not direct pressure. But like all the other stuff, like I was soaked. I was like, I don't know what sweat and what like, but like my whole thing was just soaked. I was like, it feels so good though. But I was so proud of us. We had a lot of fun. You know, Birdie is not a water dog. She was iffy on it, but also we were dangerous with it. You know what I mean? She was cracking us up because she would poke her head out of the doggy door, but just do like a security check and then go back in. But, you know, she looks grumpy. And so she was like, hey, kids, like, you know what I mean? And then like, go back in.
Get off my stoop.
Yes. It was so funny.
Did you pressure wash your front?
No, not yet.
Whose pressure washer did you use?
Kenneth, my brother.
Oh, okay. I was like,
well,
and can I borrow it?
Well, it's only a nozzle that goes on your...
The water hose?
Yeah. Because the one he has that's like gas, another friend was using. And I was like, no, this is fine. Like, we just wanted it to where we could sit outside with Birdie and stuff, you know? And it's like, it might not be 100% great, but we know it's clean. Mm-hmm. Like, we know what we've done and it's fine, you know? But God, it was so much fun. But we started watching a documentary and it was called Tell Them You Love Me on Netflix. And the gasp, I gasp. I need you to watch it.
Okay.
It's about the assisted communication. It's like FA or facilitated, FC, facilitated communication. And yeah, it's.
In what way?
So people who are nonverbal.
Yeah. No, but like, but what about it? Or can you tell me or it'll give it away?
No, I mean, like, well, I mean, it's a whole thing. So, I mean, it's not like there's like a plot twist that you couldn't find out yourself, you know, but
yeah,
it's this woman whose mom had like studied where people who had, you know, like issues writing and all of that, she would hold their like elbow or whatever, or guide their hand to be on a keyboard. And that was them being able to talk. But it's this woman who then helped one of her like doctoral students, his brother, and
don't tell us.
Yeah.
We watched the documentary Six Schizophrenic Brothers. So good.
Oh.
It was, I think it was on, it's on Max. It's so good. It's literally about a family of 12 kids.
12 kids?
Yeah, 10 boys and 2 girls. And 6 of the sons have schizophrenia.
Oh, gosh.
And so it's just about like, because I think the kids were born, like the oldest was born in like 1945 or 1950. So just like how they were raised and, you know, back then, how they thought it was like schizophrenia happened because the mother did a poor job raising
them. Of course.
And all of that. But like, it's just really cool because the parents are so smart and so are the kids. So like the kids that are being interviewed, they say words that I'm like, damn, you are brilliant. Like you are, you really were raised by people who are extremely brilliant. But also you can see how their brilliance intertwines with their schizophrenia too. It's, I don't know, it's just, it's fascinating because they're able to really look at that family to try to understand more about schizophrenia because they all share so much of the same DNA.
Mm.
Anyway, it's cool. It's worth a watch. I think it's only like 4 episodes.
Oh, okay. Also, though, I will say Love Island is back and it's the UK and US right now. Oh, I'm in overload and I love it. But I will say, normally the UK is, well, Australia, then UK, and then US. But the US this time has got some drama and I am here for it.
I thought about you. I just saw a TikTok and it was like, how well do your parents know you? And it was like this young, you know, college girl. And she had to call her parents on FaceTime and ask them 3 questions. And if they got it right, she won $20. And the last question was, what's your favorite TV show? And hers was Summer House. And so I thought of you.
Hell yeah.
That's a hard question, though, because I'm so fickle. It changes all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, it literally just depends on when you ask me.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of, and they would probably want to be more specific, is I would just say Real Housewives.
Yeah.
You know, but if they said, like, which one, Beverly Hills or New Jersey?
I would have said Orange County for you.
No, you.
Oh.
I only watch Orange County.
That's why I was like, I would have said Orange County for you.
No, for me, Love Island would probably be my favorite.
Yeah, right now, though.
But I mean, like, that's the one that I watch all the things with. I don't know. Normally, I would say it's like SVU, but I haven't even caught up with this season yet. I think it's because it's less about the cases and more about their lives.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I like SVU because of like the grit and the shocking headlines and all of that, you know? But
I did see an article that Mariska Hargitay, which is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That a kid, like for real, came up to her in New York because they were lost and they thought she was a real police officer.
Oh my gosh.
And so she was like able to help them.
Wow. Okay. I don't know why, but that just reminded me. You know how we love the Kelsys?
Yes.
Did you see that when they were at Taylor Swift's show? There was a kid and his dad, and they were just going to be outside while the parent, like the mom and the sister went in.
Yes.
And he was wearing Jason's
jersey.
Yes. And he came up and was like, nice, nice shirt, you know, kind of thing.
And I love that Kylie is so into it, his wife, that she was like filming the whole, that's who was filming.
Yeah, the whole thing.
And
I know.
That kid's face was just like, his mouth was agape the whole time.
Yeah, like there was no smile because he was just like
so
shocked.
Holy
fuck. Yes. And then he gave him like a guitar pick. Can you imagine the sister and the mom coming out and being like, oh my God, we had the best time. And he's like, yeah, but did you get this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And a picture with him. And, yeah. You know, I know the fact that they're so like into it and supportive just says so much about their family. But
yes.
Like when Jason Kelce literally leaves with like, so like he's got the friendship bracelets like all the way up, like yes. Literally hanging from his ears because he has nowhere else to put them on his arm.
Yes.
That is the best. And Prince William breaking it down is so cute dancing. Have you
yes.
seen the video of him dancing? I just saw a video of all the celebrities that have been there just in London. And it's like, well, first of all, I know I'm getting old because a bunch of them, I'd had no idea who they were.
Imagine that.
But then it was like Paul McCartney and of course like Prince William and all this stuff. It's like, holy crap. Bon Jovi, like, wow.
Yeah,
you've made it, sister.
You said wow. Who are you?
Oh, that too.
Wow, you've made it, sister. What?
Everyone who hates Taylor Swift is like, oh, every time we talk about her.
Well, why do y'all hate her then?
I really feel like some people just hate her just to hate her, because like how I'm like that sometimes with people, like if you're like quote supposed to love some, you know, and I'm like,
yeah,
you're not the boss of me, I don't like them, you know.
Yeah,
but I feel like for her, you still have to appreciate the business person that she is.
She really is a mastermind.
Yeah, the creativity, like the little Easter eggs that she leaves for her fans. Mm-hmm. And stuff, because my mom's one of those people that says she only writes songs about her ex, and I'm like, you clearly don't know her music because she writes so many things.
Yes.
And she probably writes so many songs that you like, you don't even know that she wrote.
Yeah.
Because she's like, all of her songs sound the same and she only writes about her exes. And I'm like, not true.
Not true, but also they're all different. Even if they are, like, were about her exes, they're all so different that it's, I don't know. And it's like her life. And then we get brought into it and it's...
Enough about Taylor. Let's get into my story. Okay, so this actually came from a recommendation from Becky in the email.
Becky with the good hair?
Mm-hmm. She was actually living in Buffalo at the time that this story broke. And then, like, a friend of a friend wrote in a carpool with a connection to this story. So here we go. All right, picture it.
Buffalo, New York.
How'd you guess? September 29th, 2006. There is a lady named Joan Diver. She and her husband live in Buffalo, New York, and she is an avid runner.
What's that like?
Look, there was one time in my life where I was a runner, and I literally hated every step. But on this particular day, Joan was going to get the kids off to school, take the youngest to daycare, and then she was going to go down to her favorite bike path to go on a run. Later that day, her husband finds out that Joan never picked up the kids from daycare. So he was like, something's not right. Like, oh my God, did she get hurt on her run? So he, of course, goes to the bike path and starts to look for his wife. When he doesn't find her, he calls 911. They searched all along the 2.5 miles that she usually ran. And when he called police, he told police that he had seen his wife's SUV there and it had a full bottle of water in it, like at the bike path. But when police got there, the car wasn't there. They ended up finding it like 3 miles away.
Speaking of 3 miles, real quick, if I were to say, hey, that restaurant is in walking distance.
No, it's not 3 miles. That's a fucking 5K.
One of my coworkers, he was like, yeah, there's a lot of things within walking distance. And I was like, okay, because he's a runner. And so I was like, what's a walking distance to you? Because also, like, I know New Orleans. So, like,
five blocks.
Right.
5 blocks is walking distance. It's more that we're catching a cab.
Right. Well, and even then, it's like at the end of a street.
Yeah.
There's like something there or something, you know? And he was like, 3 miles. And I was like, okay.
So police are involved. News is breaking because this is a very typical middle-class family. Like, he's a professor. She's a mom of four. And she's missing. Unfortunately, they eventually found her body about 70 or 80 feet off from the bike path and then like 20 feet into the brush. She had been strangled. But there was no evidence that she had been raped. There was no DNA evidence on her body, but there was just something about the way that she was killed that made the police go, fuck, because she had double ligature marks around her neck. And they were like, there's no fucking way. He's back. There had been a serial rapist that for over the last 20 years had been haunting Buffalo, raping women along bike paths.
Oh my gosh.
And his MO was strangling them with a garrote. He'd come from behind and the strangulation, like it would leave two, like a double, like two lines for a double ligature mark. So it was like almost a signature.
Yeah.
And at this point, this bike path rapist had become the bike path murderer and had been tied to over 9 rapes and 2 other murders.
Oh, shit.
So they were like, holy crap, like he hasn't done anything since what they thought was like 1994. So like, holy shit, is he back?
Right. And this is 2006?
Yes. Well, although Joan hadn't been raped, police hit pay dirt because inside her vehicle, they found a single drop of sweat from her steering wheel and they were able to run it and get a DNA profile.
Oh, shit.
But it's like, compare it to what?
Right.
Other than to be able to compare it to previous rape cases. Because what you'll see, though, is that we don't actually know how many rapes are tied to this because this, spoiler alert, person, we figured out, kind of changed their MO because very, very early on, they would use a gun And then there was a time where someone fought back and it was like, oh, fuck, I got to come like with the element of surprise because they're fighting back and I could get shot or whatever. And so we don't know for sure how many rapes are tied to this person because of the change in the MO. And then, you know, DNA degradates, is that the word, over time. And because this, like I said, for 20 years. The first murder that we do know of, so the first murder victim that we know of is Linda Yalom. The murders and the rapes happened between Amherst and Buffalo along different like bike paths and that sort of thing. But we'll get back to Linda. The timeline is kind of bouncy. At one point, though, there was a 44-year-old woman who was jogging because that was always the MO. The rapes occurred between like 7 a.m. and around noon. So the profile was like they probably work like the overnight shift, the third shift. And then the rapes usually happened in more the summer months because we're talking, you know, upstate-ish New York. I have no idea where it is. I'm assuming upstate New York. But so you need the summer months so that the plants and all are very lush to be able to hide what you're doing.
Me, just thinking because it's fucking cold any other time.
So they could hide what they were doing and not be seen when they take these women off the bike path. And so it was typically joggers. Now, there were some occasions where it was like somebody was cutting through, walking to school or whatever. And the victimology ranged. I mean, you saw, you know, people as young as 17 into their 40s and 50s. And most of the victims survived. There was a 44-year-old woman who was out jogging. She was raped and strangled to the point where almost every blood vessel in her eye burst. And again, the double ligature mark really becomes the telltale sign. There was one victim who later spoke out named Denise. She was actually taken in a car and told to like get down on the passenger floor. And that even 20 years later, she still has the scars from the ligature around her neck. But she says that he put the rope around her neck and held it and told her if she moved or screamed, it would get tighter. And that as she did try to fight, it would get tighter. The other thing that he would do is that before he raped them, he would always make them like pull an article of clothing over their eyes to like pull their shirt up, put their shorts over their head to block them from seeing him. Even if he had attacked them from the front, like at the beginning when he was using a gun or a knife, and also when he would attack from behind. Because sometimes he would be running past them and they would see him and smile like, hey, and then he would do a loop and come back and attack him. But back to Linda. So Linda, on September 29th, 1990, notice that's the same date, years later, that Joan was murdered. Linda was training for the New York Marathon. I love these little details of people just because it really just lets you see who they are. But on this particular day, Linda was going for one of her runs. And at this point, you know, there had been a rapist that was like raping people running and stuff at night, but she really didn't know anything about this rapist happening during the day and in this area. So she was like totally confident that she was going to be safe because it was early morning. Linda was 22 years old. She had on a Nike t-shirt and she was listening to a Tears for Fears cassette in her Walkman as she started running. For this day, Linda was working on a 15-mile run. And later that day, she had plans to watch the movie Beaches with her friends.
Now, that's a classic.
One of the best movies of all time.
Uh-huh.
So when she didn't get back to her dorm at like 9:30, they're like, okay, where is Linda? Like, we're watching this movie. Like, where is she? Her friends and roommates call campus police. So they looked and they looked. Police, volunteers, Linda's boyfriend and friends, they start looking. But at 11:30 that night, it started raining. So they were like, okay, let's call this off for now. We're not going to find anything. It's raining. We'll start again in the morning.
That's got to be so hard, though, like to call off something when you just want to find the person, you know, but you know it's for the best. They're not going to be able to find anything in the rain. But you know what I mean? It's just, God, that's so hard.
Unfortunately, the police found her body about 125 feet from the path. And just like I told you before, how they would use the shirts and stuff to block their face. That's exactly how they found Linda. Her Nike shirt that said "Run Like Hell" was over her face. There was gray duct tape covering her nose and her mouth. Now, it's believed that he didn't actually mean to kill Linda because she was the first victim, but how he had the tape that I think he accidentally suffocated her, but I'm not really sure because she was fighting. Linda fought so fucking hard to breathe and against her attacker that she literally had sucked the duct tape up her nostrils. Now, they did have some evidence, but it wasn't, you know, we're talking like 1990 evidence where they were like, okay, the blood type is O, you know, we think he's of this descent, whatever, but based on some of the eyewitnesses and all of that, because people did get a look at him, but I think it was still a little scattered, like, because there's lots of podcasts and datelines and all of that on this that you can watch, but, you know, some stuff said like he had a full head of hair, and then some stuff said he didn't, and this is why eyewitness testimony doesn't work, you know? Sometimes the attacker would also make the victims call him Dave, which was weird, but it also helped in the earlier cases when, you know, there wasn't the DNA and all of that. They were able to use that to also connect it to serial rapist and murderer later. Profilers believed that whoever was doing this likely had an affinity for sex workers.
Do you know why they thought that?
No.
Okay.
But they were right. There were some things they weren't right about, but they were right about that. And all of that was confirmed when the killer's second victim was found. I hope I'm saying this name correctly, but Majane Mazur, who was a known sex worker, and we found out later had been connected to this guy, like on multiple occasions, he had used her services. And her body was found close to some railroad tracks in downtown Buffalo. And this was in November of 1992. And then we know Joan, who was murdered September 29th of 2006. So those are the three murders that occurred. So jumping back to Joan's murder in 2006 was kind of when everything kicked back off of like, okay, let's actually, we've got more, you know, stuff to be able to do with DNA. Let's really get these areas, these different police departments from Buffalo, Amherst, state police, county, sheriffs, all of that. Let's come together and let's really figure out who the fuck is doing this. So this is when the FBI really came in and the profilers started saying like, okay, they probably work at night. Based on the DNA, they're of Hispanic origin. And they felt like based on the attacks, that they probably had issues with women, you know, having trouble talking to women or whatever.
Profilers are so freaking cool.
I know. So basically what the police did is they made a spreadsheet of literally all of the crimes. Anything that was like remotely related to this person, because there was stuff like some happened next to like a statue of David. Some happened in Buffalo. Some happened in Amherst. Some happened right on the bike track. Some happened, you know, on the railroad tracks, but they were all connected. So they know that these crimes have literally been going on since at least since 1986.
If you think about that, how I think about time, that was 1 year after we were born. And then 2006, we were in college. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Holy fuck.
As the police are making the spreadsheets and putting all the pieces together of what rapes did this person actually do, they find out that there are two rapes from 1985 that a guy named Anthony Capozzi is in prison for and has been there for 20 years. And the more they started looking at it, they were like, Anthony Capozzi didn't do those rapes. So in 1985, Anthony Capozzi was a 29-year-old who lived at home because he had schizophrenia. And there had been some rapes that had happened, and someone had seen a man who was in the area who looked out of place and who they felt like essentially looked sketchy. Well, the person that they felt like looked sketchy was Anthony Capozzi because he had schizophrenia and, quote, looked weird to them, like looked out of place, looked like he was doing stuff he shouldn't have been doing, whatever. When police came to talk to him, He literally told his mom, like, don't worry, I'll be back. Because he's like, I didn't do anything. Like, what are they doing? Well, they fucking arrested him for 2 rapes. Anthony Capozzi came up for parole 5 times. And every single time he was denied parole because they wanted him to admit what he had done and he wouldn't. It had been 22 years that he had been in prison when the police were going, hold the fuck. He didn't do this. This is the same guy that did this. And now we have DNA that is starting to link all of these cases. They didn't know who the DNA belonged to, but they knew that these cases are starting to be able to be proven to be the same person. And if he did, you know, this rape, and we have DNA to prove it, but this is the exact same MO with the same ligature marks and all that, even if there's not DNA, it's the same person. The problem with the Anthony Capozzi thing, though, is that he had been identified. Like, he had been picked out of a lineup, but it wasn't right. And so that's why I'm like, eyewitness testimony is so hard because, I mean, he really didn't do it. So the detectives are doing the best that they can to be able to get Anthony Capozzi out, but they have to, one, prove this. They have to, one, prove he didn't do it, but also prove who did. When Anthony Capozzi was at trial, like in prison, going to trial, all of that, there were still rapes happening that matched the MO of the rapes that he was being tried for, and they weren't allowed to bring that up at court. So they were like, okay, we got to prove he didn't do it. There's got to be some rape kits, some slides with DNA, some something on it so we can use to prove that he didn't do it. And they're like, no, it's all gone.
All of it?
All of it. So they're like, we have to prove who did this. Like, we can't, there's no way to prove he didn't do it because all the evidence is gone. But the police start looking through the file from Anthony Capozzi's trial and all. In this file, there was a license plate number. And the importance of this license plate number was because there was a victim. Let's call her Dorothy. Dorothy had been attacked by the bike path rapist. And it had been days since she had left her house because she, of course, had just been attacked. She and her sister finally leave the house. Days it's been. And while they're out and about, she literally sees him.
Oh my gosh.
And she's like, holy fuck, sister, like that's him. He's the one that attacked me. And so they see this guy just like nonchalantly walking hand in hand with this woman. They have a kid.
No.
And she's like, that's fucking him.
Oh my gosh.
So they follow him to like the parking lot, wherever, see him getting in a car. And they take down the license plate number. They call police. Police are like, dee doo boop boop boop, run the license plate. And they come up to this car owner. The car owner is like, yeah, that's my car. I don't know what the fuck y'all are talking about, though. My car doesn't have insurance. It hadn't been driven in forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, so where were you? Blah, blah, blah. And he had an alibi for when Dorothy, air quotes, was raped. So they were like, cool, we're going to take a picture of you. Cheek, cheek, show Dorothy. And she's like, that ain't him. So they're like, okay, well, that's like why it's just like this random piece of information tucked away into this file.
Yeah.
So cut to current police who are like, what the fuck is this license plate? Dee-doo, boop, boop, boop. Let's go talk to this guy again. Well, as Tiffany says, ended up winding up, that guy lied all those years ago. He knew exactly who was in that vehicle. It was his nephew. His nephew was driving that vehicle.
Oh my gosh. Fuck that dude.
His nephew's name was Altemio Sanchez. So Altemio Sanchez was born in Puerto Rico. And when he was young, his mom caught his dad having an affair with a sex worker. So she moved herself and Altemio to like the continental United States. They lived in Miami for a little while and then ended up moving to New York.
Do you think that's why he had the affinity for sex workers?
I hold that thought.
Okay.
When Altemio was young, he was actually physically and sexually abused by his mother's boyfriends.
Oh my gosh.
And then it is said that his mom was physically abusive to him. And then he also saw the mother's boyfriends physically abuse the mother.
Oh, fuck.
Now, his mom had a drinking problem, and part of his issues stemmed when he found out that his mom didn't want him and that tried to force an abortion by taking medication. And so that really affected him, that his mom tried to terminate the pregnancy. And it seems like kind of pissed that it didn't work, you know?
Yeah.
Like with her alcoholism, I feel like I can just see this scenario like a movie playing out where like she's drunk and she's like, I didn't even want you, you yes. know?
Oh my gosh.
But they say for the most part, he was like a happy, shy kid, like played sports in high school, but was like seriously shy with girls, like wouldn't talk to them. So in high school and all, he never had any girlfriends. They think his first rape may have been as early as 1975, his senior year of high school.
Oh my gosh.
He went to Buffalo State College, and that's where he met his future wife, Kathleen. Now, there was, like, at the beginning, because there was an attack in 77 where there was a victim that was out riding her bike. He hit her in the head and threatened her with a knife, but it was the whole Call Me Dave thing that mm-hmm. we were able to connect. But back then, I don't know how to say this any differently, so I'm sorry if this is a terrible way to say this. He would, like, dry hump them, essentially. Like, he wouldn't penetrate. Like, he would, you know, physically attack them and all, but, like, there was no penetration.
Yeah.
Is that how... I'm sorry. I feel like that's, like, the crudest way to say that. I couldn't think of any other way to say it.
Like, he would assault them, but not rape them.
Yeah, they, like, he'd just, like, rub up against Ugh. Them. So Altemio and his wife end up getting married in 1980, and they have two kids together, and they literally live the most normal life ever. Like, he is a like basketball coach and part of the kids' lives and all the things, and they seem like a very happy family. He ends up taking a job at this company called American Brass, like as a machinist factory worker. And I do want to say, I heard on this podcast called Judge and Jeremy, this is the only place I saw this. Well, and by that, I mean, I heard it. They talked about how there was this one situation in which a guy that worked at American Brass saw Altemio like at the bike path. And it's like in the opposite direction of where he lives. And he's like, bro, why are you here? Like, what you doing? And he said like, oh, I'm here meeting my wife because she goes to college here. And she went to the other college, like not that one. And that he did tell police that, but like they blew him off. I don't know though. But Altemio had been arrested twice in Buffalo for solicitation. So they were like, okay, well, this has got to be him. Like, it's the solicitation. And they know from his job records that, okay, he was worked the third shift. So that's exactly right. He got off at like that 7 a.m., you know, to be able to do the rapes at that time. They also were able to say like, okay, on the times that were different, he was off work and he matches the description. Like, this has got to be him.
Well, and they knew he would be of like Hispanic descent.
Exactly.
Like that.
So they were like, okay, we got to get a DNA sample, but we can't just be like, knock, 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 give me your DNA. One, because they don't have a warrant. And two, they're going to tip him off. So they're like, bet, let's watch. So they start watching. And eventually one night, he and his wife go to dinner on a little date. And as soon as they leave the restaurant, they grab a glass, napkin, anything that they can get for DNA. And I'm like, hey, do they ask that restaurant, like, can I steal this glass and this napkin?
Right.
Or do they just take it? Or is the restaurant like, please, yes, absolutely take this. You know?
Yeah.
Like, do they just swipe it? Or are they just like to the manager, like, hey, I've got to get this from this table.
Right. But also, if you think about it, sometimes like they clean our table while we're sitting there because like we'll just be gabbing and stuff. Could you imagine if you're, like, waiting for that?
Well, literally, because one of the episodes that I watched, they literally said it was like waiting for a baby to be born. Like, they were just, like, hovering over the phone and all that, waiting for the information to come back once they sent off the DNA. So probably the same thing while they were waiting on getting it, too.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to say, too, I think this was on, pretty sure this was on the Judge and Jeremy podcast, too. I also listened to the podcast Serial Killers about it. There was a police officer who they kind of knew like the area in which this was happening, right? So he would go and hunker down and just watch and wait for something to happen so he could catch it. And I'm talking days upon days upon days that he did this. And on his day off, a rape happened.
Oh my gosh.
So the police wait and wait and wait. Didn't take long. And eventually the DNA came back. And yes, Altemio Sanchez was linked via DNA to all of it.
Wow.
So they arrest him and they charge him with 2 counts of murder in the second degree. And he pled not guilty. Now, there were a lot of rapes that they couldn't charge him with because the statute of limitations at the time was like 5 years in New York for rape.
Wow.
So there was a ton that they couldn't charge him with. But people were like, what? This guy, our neighbor, our coach, our coworker, our what? He's accused of the bike path rapist? Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, he and his wife had been together for 25 years and she literally had no fucking clue.
Oh, God, I feel so sorry for her and
her
kids.
I know, I know. She eventually does divorce him, but geez. With the DNA, they were for sure able to link him to 7 rape cases and 3 murders. That also showed that Anthony was innocent. You remember the guy that had been in jail for 22 years? I love how I just use jail and prison interchangeably, like it's the same thing. So as it progressed for Altemio's day in court, they ended up being able to connect him again to like 15 rapes and the 3 murders. Guess what else, though, they found out while they were doing this investigation?
Oh, God, what?
There had been memorial runs in Linda's honor for like safe running and stuff. That motherfucker ran in her memorial race.
Oh, my God.
What a piece of shit. You know what that when that was, too? The same fucking day that he killed Joan. Yep.
Wow.
There are even pictures of him and his wife go into like a dinner party the night that he killed somebody.
How fucking heartless and just, ugh.
Now, at the beginning, his wife did go to all of his court hearings and visited him in jail. She does eventually divorce him. But while all this is going on, they're still trying to figure out how the fuck to get Anthony Capozzi out of prison because he is in there for rapes that we know for a fact that he didn't do. But we got to prove it. But remember, everything's fucking lost. Until one day, investigators get a call. They had found all of the rape kits, the swabs, the slides were there after all.
Oh my gosh.
They had literally been sitting in a drawer.
Oh my gosh.
So they were able to finally prove that Anthony Capozzi was innocent.
Well, thank God.
So they got him out of prison, but he did have to go into a psychiatric facility. I don't know if he's still in there or not, but he did have to go in order to start adjusting to a more independent life. Because of his schizophrenia, he was 29 at the time. Now he's like 50-ish because he was in for 22 years, you know.
His whole life.
His whole life. So he is like transitioning. But eventually, Altemio had a change of heart and ended up pleading guilty. He didn't have to go to trial. And he was sentenced to 75 consecutive years in prison. And in 2010, Anthony was awarded $4.25 million for compensation for his wrongful incarceration.
Oh, that's just a drop in the bucket.
Now, I know. Now, there was like Anthony's Law type thing that was passed to like give them priority of getting their compensation. So that there was something good that came of it. And then last thing about this story, on September 22nd of 2023, Altemio Sanchez was 65 and was found unresponsive in his cell from self-inflicted cuts in his arm and was later pronounced dead at the hospital.
Wow. So many victims. Like over so long.
And I feel like we just like a drop in the bucket of all of the victims, because it would literally be like, on this day, a person was attacked, and you don't even know everybody's names.
Yeah.
You know, so it would literally be just like this timeline, you know. Ugh. Now, there was a really good timeline on gavinfish.com. They also have a Patreon where you can like open up all of the different case documents that they get and pay for. So if you have Patreon, you can access that. But they had a really good breakdown of the timeline if you want to see like every single rape that he was tied to. But I mean, at least 15 rapes and 3 murders.
Wow. We hate him.
Oh, without a doubt.
And that just goes to show you, like, it doesn't matter who you are or who you think someone is. People are capable of heinous, terrible acts. You know, like, oh my God, he's our coach. He's, you know, this. And it's like, yeah, but he's a killer.
Yep.
He's a rapist. He's been doing this and then coming to coach your kids' games.
Yeah. Can you imagine his poor wife? I mean, you get married and you think you really know someone. And they have been, I think about how well Colby knows me. Like, he literally the other night heard me breathe and said, what's wrong? And I was like crying about my dad. Like, he just knew from the way I was breathing that I was upset about something.
Yeah.
And for you to know your partner that well, but then find out that they had been a rapist and a murderer your whole marriage and had been like, do it like with sex workers and all of that. And just the risk that they've put you in your whole marriage and just the lies and the betrayal. I just can't even imagine.
I can't either.
But they basically said that they feel like all the abuse that he endured and saw towards women in his childhood is what really led to this.
Mm. It's so hard when someone who was a victim becomes a perpetrator, you know, because you feel so sorry for them for having to endure what they did. But then it's like, we were rooting for you.
I know.
Well, thank you, Becky, for this recommendation. Who did she say who she knew?
So she said that my husband and I were living in Buffalo. He was born and raised at the time this broke, and he was finally called. A friend of a friend's daughter actually used to carpool with him. This guy's a real piece of work.
Okay, well, this one, I'm dipping my toe into Carrie's pond again.
This bitch.
Uh-huh. But I feel like there is a supernatural element to it, too, which you'll see what I mean. But picture it. River Ridge, Louisiana, 1987. Do you know where that is?
River Ridge, what?
Louisiana.
No.
Okay. It's a small suburb of New Orleans, and it's a community where everyone knew everyone, and there is a sense of safety and security in River Ridge. Like, sure, it was close to New Orleans, but it was far from the evil lurking in the big city, you know? However, in June of 87, Andre Daigle went missing. Now, I will say, like, he's from River Ridge, and his family still lives there, but at the time of his missing, he lived in New Orleans. Andre was 27 years old and was like all the other Dateline peeps who go missing. He lit up a room, had that type of personality. His friends and his families describe him as outgoing, kind, and loving. He worked as a carpenter for home reno projects. And in early June, he had just finished up work for the day on an ongoing project and met his friend Nick Shelley for dinner at a Mexican restaurant named Chi-Chi's. And you know we love a Mexican restaurant.
Girl, it's literally my favorite.
Now, after dinner, the two of them went to Mitchell's Lounge to play some pool and just unwind from the day. Now, that's when Andre met a woman named Thelma, and they instantly connected, flirted, all the things. After several games of pool, it was time to call it a night because Andre had to work the next day. So Thelma asked Andre for a ride. And of course, being the kind person Andre was, he was like, for sure, no problem. But that was the last time anyone saw Andre alive because he didn't show up to work. And that was not his MO. But then when his family hadn't heard from him that night, it was like, no, something is wrong. And Andre's older brother, Chris, knew in his gut that Andre was missing. So, you know, they were a close-knit family. And again, when they hadn't heard from Andre, Chris called the police. However, it hadn't been super long of him missing. You know, it hadn't been a day. And he was also 27 years old. So the police were like, you know, he's an adult. And how you said, like, an adult, they can just disappear if they want to.
Right. That make it easier on everybody else, but they could.
Yeah. But the family was like, no, like, no, we know Andre and this is not like him. And they weren't going to just sit there and wait. So they started retracing Andre's last steps and everything. And that's when Nick told them about Thelma. But the thing is that he really couldn't describe her that much because she always seemed to just like kind of be hiding her face from him because he was at the pool table and Andre was the one who was at the bar beside her. And I feel like, you know, in movies and TV shows when they're like hiding someone being pregnant. And so it's like always something like a prop in front of them. That's how it was for her. You know, like every time like Nick went to look, something was blocking her face, you know, like her hair was down this way and all of that. And again, Andre was flirting with her and stuff. So Nick wasn't like really like up there, you know, like doing his thing. He was sitting back. And the reason why Andre was at the bar is that he had to buy the round of beers because he had lost the first game of pool. So it was like, you know, loser has to buy the round. And that's how he met Thelma. Now, Andre's sister, Elise, she was living in California at the time. Now, she had went to see a psychic 2 days prior to Andre's disappearance. It was something that her friend had talked her into, and Elise wasn't thinking too much of it. More like, okay, it's something fun to do. And it was like a group reading, and so Elise had no intentions of ever seeing the psychic again. However, the psychic wasn't what she had expected, really, you know, and must have been pretty compelling because when Elise got word that Andre was missing and the police weren't really helping at that point, Elise was like, you know what? I'm going to see if that psychic can help. So she went back over to the psychic and she asked for help. Rosemarie Kerr, the psychic medium, agreed. She asked for a photo of Andre and a map of Louisiana. So something to note about Rosemarie, she discovered that she had this gift at age 4. And this is wild to me, but she lived in Brooklyn.
Well, not quite the same place, but the same state.
Yeah. But she grew up there above her father's candy store. Now, one night she woke up and she was like just screaming from a nightmare. And she was like, he's trying to kill us all. He's trying to kill us all. And they're like, what are you talking about? She said, he's going to lock us up and he's going to burn down the house. Well, everyone's like, okay, like you've got a wild imagination. But a few weeks later, an uncle who lived across the street locked his wife and child in the bathroom and set their house on fire.
Oh my God.
And since then, Rosemarie has known like what her gift was and just kept honing in on it. Now, when she held the picture in her hands for the first time, she said she didn't even look good at it because she just started feeling a sensation in her fingers. She said, imagine you're reading Braille, and that was kind of the sensation she was having when she rubbed her fingers over the picture. She started describing images that she was seeing in her mind, and she said it was a male in a dark little truck driving down the road. And Elise was like, no, that's not it. He drove a white car. Like, this is completely wrong. And Rosemarie's like, I'm telling you what I'm seeing. Like, I don't know whose vehicle this is, but this is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing him in this vehicle, and it's a little black truck. And so Elise is like, okay, just keep going, but like, I think you oversold yourself. This is not working out. But little did Elise know, Andre had recently bought a new vehicle, and like, new to him, it was a black Ford pickup truck. Rosemarie kept going on about the visions she was seeing, and she said that she could see Andre in the truck with someone who had long blonde hair and seemed to have power over him. She then asked for a map of Louisiana, and she closed her eyes and she let her fingers wander over the map. And she said she felt a vibration and she could feel it on her fingers, like in her hand. And that was her sign on where to stop. She opened her eyes and asked Elise if she was familiar with the place she was pointing to. Do you want to know where it is?
Where?
Slidell.
Right up the road.
I mean, like, it's just weird because I know these places, you know, like literally I've been
right up the road.
Yeah, I've been to this place and it's just wild. Rosemary was like, okay, if you know this place, you need to do it now and do it quick because this is where you have to go to find your brother's vehicle. So Elise called up her mom at the house and they were just getting back from searching. And she's like, all right, so I'm at the psychic's house. Like, this is what's going on. But here's the thing, Slidell was like 30 miles away from River Ridge. So it was somewhere that they wouldn't have really looked, especially at like the first night and stuff. I mean, it was like 2 days, but you know what I mean? Like, they hadn't made it that far in their search and they really weren't thinking about that. But when Elise called, Chris was like, fuck yeah. Like, cause they were trying to map out, okay, where do we need to go tomorrow? You know, all of that. And Chris said he just remembered getting goosebumps when Elise said Slidell. And he said it was like the spirit had touched him on the shoulder, just urging him to go. Like, listen to her. This sounds wild. And like, of course, my sister in California is going to see a psychic.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But he's like, let's just do it. Like, what do we have to lose? And Elise is like, stop talking and go, because she said you have to go now. So Chris and Nick jumped in the car. Now, Nick is the guy who was last seen with Andre, and they headed to Slidell. Now, they had other family following behind them in cars. Like I said, it wasn't a long drive, and while they were driving, Rosemary had said to keep talking out loud to Andre. Like, she needed them to have a connection. So they just kept saying, like, hold on, like, we're coming for you, we're looking for you, all of this. Well, not far into their drive, they spotted Andre's car on the interstate, and it was headed towards Slidell. Now, they weren't expecting to see the truck on the road. They actually did like a little pass, and then they did a double take, and they were like, who's driving that? Because also, I think they were thinking that it was going to be on the side of the road or something, you know, but like, no, it's actually being driven. And so they decided to follow the truck to see where it went. And now before you're thinking it's a black pickup, that's super common, especially down here. Andre's truck had a distinctive scratch on it, and this truck did as well. So Chris slowed down because at this point, there was no cell phone, you know, to have. So he slowed down and yelled back to one of his sisters in the other vehicle and was like, hey, exit, find a phone, call mom, and get her to call the police.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand why not call the police
first.
Yeah. But it's like, I feel like that's just such a thing to do. Like, hey, call mom, tell her to call the police.
Mom knows all things. Call her first.
But guess what? They were headed east on I-10.
They coming right to us.
So the truck exited off the interstate down a little side street, and Chris followed about 40 to 50 feet behind the truck. But Chris said it felt like they knew then that they were being followed. So Chris just kind of parked on the side to let the truck pass, maybe so they could see them. But that's when the truck took off. And so Chris and them started speeding up to chase them. It's like 1 a.m. at this point, and there was one lone patrol car on duty that wasn't far. And like, when they were speeding, they like stopped and they're like, hey, they stole that truck, like, you know, all the things. And so the police are like, you know, going for it. And so it's just like multiple cars, just a high speed chase at like 1 a.m. But the police actually catch up with the truck and they end up pulling the truck over. And they're really just thinking this is a stolen truck because, you know, Chris didn't have time to say, okay, actually, my brother's missing. They're just like, he stole that truck. Like, let's get the truck back. There were two guns and some ammunition found when they searched the truck. Now, Chris was screaming at them and like saying, like, where's my brother? Like, tell us where he is, all the things. But they never said anything. But lo and behold, they didn't need to, because Elise's psychic, Rosemary, she was having some visions.
Uh-oh.
She began expressing that her head was hurting, and she said that she heard a voice say, my head is killing me. She said that once she started hurting like this and having those visions, she knew Andre was no longer alive, but she kept that to herself because she was like, you know, like, let's just find him and then we can go through that. But for me to tell the sister that he's no longer alive and not knowing definitively,
right,
you know, it's, and all of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's not like she physically saw his body. Like, let's see how this plays out.
Right. Well, then she had several short images, like short just snapshots. And it was a swamp, the number 7, a sandy beach, and a long, low bridge over some water.
Well, that could literally be fucking anywhere in South Louisiana.
Right. But the thing is that she was from, you know, New York, had moved to California, and she had no fucking clue about Louisiana.
Yeah, but I feel like swamp is what people think of when they think of Louisiana.
That's true. That's true. So the two men were ID'd as Charles Gervais, 24, of New Orleans, and Michael Phillips, 21, of Kenner.
Now, Kenner, I know. That other shit you said, I didn't know.
Where?
What? You never heard of Kenner?
Where did you not know?
The first place you said that I didn't know.
Oh, River Ridge.
Yeah.
I thought you meant Gervais. I was like, that's his name.
No.
Okay. Whew. But yeah, like, no.
If y'all could have seen her face, where?
Because I was like, where do you not know in Louisiana?
Well, a lot of places.
But like, this is all in the stomping grounds over here.
Yeah.
You know, like you fucking pass these places going to your sisters. Well, Charles and Michael both had prior felonies and they were in possession of firearms. So they were taken to the station.
Okay. If you could have been in my brain, I was like, firearms? What the fuck? I heard fireworks.
Oh.
And I was like, okay.
Well, it is close to 4th of July, so I could see like yeah. why that...
Went straight to bottle rockets.
Hey, those could be weapons.
Hey, for real. Working hand therapy, all fireworks can Ooh. Be weapons.
Yeah. Now, while they were there, they were separated and whatnot, you know, and the police still didn't know the extent of what was going on. And it was just kind of like... They weren't talking, but then, you know, they kind of split them up and was like, all right, well, you have to tell me, you know, like, mm-hmm. tell us what's going on. And then they were like, your friend's telling us. And so they're yeah. like, oh, well, we killed him. And they're like,
what?
You know, like,
killed who? What are you talking about?
Yeah, they're like,
stole the car?
Right. And so what they had done was like, basically like, just write it down, tell us everything, like, whatever. And then went to the other one. And that's when he was like, we killed him, you know, and it's like, what? You know, they had left yeah. him to like, yeah, he's going to just tell us like they stole the gun, stole right. the truck, whatever. Charles ended up being the one who confessed. And this just, oh, like it breaks my heart. So they were just sitting around one night talking with Thelma Horn, who was Michael's girlfriend. So her name really was Thelma. And they were just saying like, do you think you could actually kill someone? Like, do you think you could, you know?
God.
And they were like, oh, fuck yeah. You know, and then it's like, no, you couldn't, you know, that whole thing. And so they were like, yeah, like, let's see what it's like. And so that's what they decided to do. Also, they needed a reliable vehicle and some money because they were about to be evicted from their apartment. Like, their landlord was, like, basically trying to knock on the door, and they're like, nobody's home, like, for, yeah. like, a week. And so they knew, because they hadn't paid in forever, that they were being evicted. So they were trying to get their little ducks in a row, but also not just, like, not that you should do anything, but, like, not just going to carjack someone or rob someone. Like, they wanted then to just see if they could kill someone. So the trio concocted a little experiment and a plan. Thelma would go to the local bar and lure someone back so the two men could kill this person just to see if they could go through with it. And that's just what happened. Andre Daigle was not targeted, really. He was just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's so fucked up.
Right? And can you imagine Nick Shelley? Like, he was there. Had he lost that round, you know, like, would it have been him?
Yeah.
You know, like, again, I don't know if he was single, whatever, you know what I mean? But like, it's just so happenstance. There yeah. was no like, oh, she was attracted to Andre or any.
No.
Like, no. It was literally, meh, he'll do. Oh, just that sends chills down my spine. Like just thinking about Nick could have been him.
And you're literally, because it makes you feel like you're literally never safe.
Right. Right. So when Thelma said, hey, let's go home. Like, will you take me home? Andre drove her. And that's when the two men came and overpowered him. They took turns hitting Andre over the head with a hammer and like a claw hammer.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. A total of like over 10 times. Then they strangled him with a cord from a light, but that broke. And so they used another cord from a vacuum. And those fucking vacuum cords are fucking heavy duty. How do I know? Because my mom had so many that you had to like roll up, you know, but it was like so thick. Oh,
that was such a weird Donna focus moment.
Well, because it, also my mom was not particular about anything, but if you left the like it hanging weird, she did not like that. Now, the night after and days after, they acted like nothing had happened.
Much
right?
Like even in my story, going out to dinner with his wife, just like chilling, running in the fucking race.
Right. They weren't as cool as him. They were what you would expect people who thought, could I get away with this? I don't know.
Yeah.
Would kind of act like. So Tammy Slaughter was a neighbor and a friend of the trio. So she had went over to watch TV at their apartment, and she said nothing was too weird. Like, she said, like, basically they all sat on the couch and she sat somewhere else, you know, like, she's like, I mean, whatever, you know, two of them were dating. Then the other one was like me, like, but again, a trio.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, y'all sit over here, whatevs. But then looking back, she's like, oh. Because the next day, she noticed that the furniture was rearranged and it was really cold inside. And they just kind of brushed it off. But also, if you have to think about that they were going to be evicted and all of that, but like they're running that air constantly, it's freezing. So it's like, you know, that's going to be expensive.
Right.
So she's just like, what the fuck? But again, you know, whatevs. She testified that she also noted that they had a black truck, but they said it was a truck that they had borrowed from a friend. You know, again, she's like, okay, because why would you?
Right. Why would you not believe
that?
Them?
Yeah. And again, it was, if you think about him being a carpenter and stuff, it was a work truck.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it wasn't like you got a brand new like Lincoln Navigator. I don't fucking know. But, you know,
yeah.
like, whose friend let you borrow that? You right. know?
They weren't in like an F fucking 350 with, I don't know, whatever they have. Like, that's the biggest truck I could think of. But, you know, it wasn't yeah. like this like $100,000 truck. It's
right.
like a work truck.
Yeah.
Which those can be expensive. But
oh, for sure. The next day, Tammy went back over to their apartment and the temperature was normal. And again, the furniture was more rearranged because the maroon couch was gone and there was a red spot on the carpet. But again, she's like, okay, you know, because they probably said, well, we're getting evicted, so we are moving stuff out.
Right.
You know, before we lose all of our stuff, blah, 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 blah. And they had a truck. So, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it, like, oh, you borrowed the truck so you can
yeah.
move the furniture, whatever. Well, Charles ended up giving the police the location information of Andre's remains. They had wrapped his body in curtains and hid him in the sofa, that maroon sofa of theirs. So like they turned the couch over, hollowed it out, and then put his body in there and nailed some slats to the bottom to keep his body in the couch. And so that's why they were sitting on the couch, because you would be able to tell that
there's
like nothing really, you
yeah.
know what I mean? Like something's not
wow.
here. Yeah. Which reminded me of that story you did where the kid had the girl in his
under the waterbed.
Yes.
Yes. But also, okay, tell me why I have such issues with this, because like I know this is my own personal thing, but also the fact that she was there and like they're all in on this secret, like it would just make me feel like the fool.
Oh, for sure.
Like, okay. So they all knew this and they were hiding this and they were just sitting there on this couch with this like out of the couch pretending like nothing was wrong. Like I don't know. It would just make me feel like a fool.
Yeah. Well, it would make me feel mad at myself. Like, why wasn't that more weird to me? Like, I thought about it. Why wasn't that anything? But also, like, at that point, I mean, she would have had to wait, go home and call the police. Because what are you going to say? Like, why are y'all three sitting on a thing? Like,
but she literally had no reason to think it was weird other than, like, these fuckers are weird.
Right.
I would have been what in the thruple is going on here?
Yeah. I would have been like, why can't I be involved?
Like, I would have been like, oh, they're all hooking up. Okay.
Yeah. They then drove down the highway and took exit 7, which is the number that Rosemarie had in her vision. And it was near a strip of sandy beach located in the Manshack Swamp. Is that how you say it?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure, but it's one of those. I know I did a story with Julie Brown and she lived there, but I'm like, did I say it right then? I don't know. But again, with the swamp and like all of that matches the descriptions she'd given. She was so accurate, in fact, that she was called as a witness.
What?
And it was the first time a psychic had ever given testimony on a case that they helped solve. Both men eventually pled guilty and they were charged with first degree murder. They both received life in prison without parole. Thelma Horn was later charged with first degree murder as well.
Good. I was wondering about that. Mm-hmm,
because people had argued about it and they're like, no, she went there. She picked him out. You know, like she's the one who chose and got him to drive home. Like she was.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been there if it was not for her.
Right.
She is just as culpable. Like she didn't hit him, but again, he was there because of her.
Right. And she knew the plot. It wasn't like she was like, oh, no, let's go back to my house. Like my my two friends are there. You know, no, she was dating this other guy who she knew wanted to see if they could kill this person. You know, something like there's no deniability in that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But she was convicted of second degree murder and given life in prison without parole.
Meanwhile, they got to serve that in a freaking Louisiana prison. Damn.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's going to be hot.
Well, so while in jail, Charles made news because he said, well, okay, it was actually an initiation into a satanic cult.
Okay.
And he then filed a lawsuit against the jail.
Of course he did.
Because he said that they were not recognizing his right to practice his religion in his cell, which was Satanism. And so, you know, this whole big thing, but nothing ever came of it.
Yeah, because it's not real. I mean, like, not saying the religion's not real, saying he's just doing that so that he, like, doesn't have to go to certain things or whatever. Like, he, fuck off, dude.
Yeah, I really think he thought that that would get him out, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, well, it was because of this is why I did it. So it's not like I chose really to do
right.
it. Like, I had to prove myself. And also, they're not allowing me, so they're, like, you know, taking my rights away.
Fuck off, dude.
But I was like, of course. And of course, it's in the South, so of course they use Satanism.
Yes.
Like, and it's like, that's not what you think it is.
Yeah, you saying that that's what this was shows me that you don't know what this was.
Right. And I'm not saying that there's not sex of those, of any religion.
For
that
sure.
That is bad. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter because obviously we can tell by the two stories we've done, some people are just going to do bad things.
Absolutely.
But Rosemarie kept in touch with Andre's family after this. And she said that she talked to Andre on and off, not like a daily thing, but it was a part of her life then to talk to Andre. And I'm sure because it was such a like pivotal piece of her life for her. To have this monumental moment where her gift that she's had that's made her different this whole time and, you know, all of that to be validated by the court.
Well, I was going to say, and to be the only person with the court to have been able to do this.
Yeah. And like, even the police were just like, ugh. Of course she had a psychic talking to her, you know?
Right.
And they're like, okay, fine. But then it's like, when they were going to the body and it was like Okay, check mark on that. Okay, could have been luck. Check mark on that. You know, like, and it was just so to the T of everything.
Yeah.
They were like, we wouldn't have been able to find him without her because they would not have found his truck. No telling where the truck would have been.
Right.
You know, all of that. Like, had they not just went when she said, go now. Like, yeah. If you want to go, you go now. And it's like fucking, again, like 1 a.m.
Right.
So, like, it's just so wild that that happened. Also, if you think about it, 2 days before, Elise went there for no reason. And she's like, fine, I'll do it. It's a group thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just be a joiner, you know?
Yeah.
And then just, yeah, to be like, well, fuck.
Like, Sylvia Brown could never.
Right. Right.
Remember when she bamboozled us all in the
90s? All of us. I'm sure there's some people that are like, no, didn't believe her. Which, okay, sure. But she got me. She got Montel Williams, so.
Yeah, I was the, like, fucking Tyra Banks. Like, we were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. And then you fucking tricked us all. I'm mad.
The fact that Rosemarie didn't say anything about Andre being deceased at this point, but Sylvia Brown, she was all about saying that people, remember J.C. Dugard or whatever?
She said she was dead.
Uh-huh. And she was alive, you know, but it's like, she was so quick to say, they're dead. This is how I'm connected with them, you know, all of that. Anyway, but Rosemarie passed away in 2015 after battling a lot of health issues and everything. But she went on to help solve several cases. Now, some she didn't solve, you know, but like she did have a lot under her belt. She was a regular on a show called Psychic Investigators, and this was actually on season 2, episode 3 called Decoy Dolly, which, fuck Thelma.
Yeah, like, I just don't understand how you go from sitting around having a conversation, because I was literally going to ask you this after you said that, is like, do you think that every single person is capable of murder? To having that conversation to be like, if you go get somebody, I'll do it.
Right.
Like, how do you go from this hypothetical, you know?
I just don't get it.
I don't get it.
Me either. Because even, like, you just, like, if you were asking me, I'd be like, if it was a threat against, like, someone I loved or me. And, like, right now, you know what I mean? Like, not like someone said they might hurt Carrie or something, I wouldn't be like, I'm going to go kill him.
No,
like,
but no, if somebody was literally breaking in the house right now.
Yeah, and that, I feel like I might be able to. I have no fucking clue, you know? But I never want to get to that point. I never want to know.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I think everybody is capable of it. Given the right circumstances, I think everyone's capable.
Yeah.
Because you put somebody in a corner, you know,
right?
Like, especially like a parent or whatever with their kid. Absolutely. I think everyone's capable.
Yeah. But it's like, sure.
But not like that.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like we said, you're painted in a corner. Somebody's breaking into your house. Somebody's attacking your kid. Yada, yada, yada. Not, you want to go, should we? Can we? Should we send Donna?
Like I couldn't.
No.
I could not.
Look, I can't even. If you said, punch me right now as hard as you could, my body would physically not let me actually punch you as hard as I could.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want to hurt you.
Yeah.
Like the other day, Colby stuck his finger in my mouth and was like, bite it as hard as you can. And I physically could not. He's like, I'll tell you what's up. And I was like, no, like my mouth will not physically let me.
Yeah.
But if you were attacking me, bitch.
Right.
Bet. I'm going to bite. I'm going to punch. I'm going to kick.
Yes.
I think at least. I don't know. I may freeze and just go limp noodle. Who knows?
Hey, that's also a defense.
Especially when you got this figure. Damn, these stories were a doozy. Y'all let us know what y'all think about that. Do you think everyone's capable? Because that's a tough question.
It is.
But I definitely think so, given the right circumstances.
I think so, too. I think we all have our limit, you know? And, like, the people that we love or, I don't know. But, yeah, I was like, well, this is true crime, but
it was
such a monumental thing.
And so close to us.
So close.
Never even heard of it.
No.
well, thank you for the recommendation, Becky with the good hair. And y'all keep them coming. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.